be sure to try out Agoge Combatives. That is going to be the premier destination to pick up a new hobby in Chattanooga. Oh yeah, and that hobby for you is going to be MMA, mixed martial arts. Trust me, it goes way beyond just the sport. MMA is a fantastic way to get out of your comfort zone and meet new people, and Agoge Combatives is going to be the place for you to do that, as you're going to be learning from the best coaches and athletes in the region. Everyone from Torres Finney to Jazzy the Jazzmanian Devil Sergeant, who you guys know, I'm a big fan of both those people, and the rest of the incredible staff over at Agoge Combatives. If you want to learn everything from wrestling, Krav Maga, striking, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, it's all going to be there at Agoge Combatives. So do not miss out on the incredible experience that is waiting for you over at Agoge Combatives. Visit AgogeCombatives.com to see a full selection of their classes and instructors and learn more. One more time, that is going to be AgogeCombatives.com.
Now you're all in big, big trouble.
You're suspect.
This is how I win.
All right, we are back here on the Watch It Podcast. I return to you after a week hiatus as I was traveling down to the Florida Keys for work. Believe it or not, went to an idyllic location for work down there in Duck Key. Got a lot of good work done down there. Back here, and it's cold again in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Today, the high was a brisk, relatively 63. Usually, that wouldn't be a huge deal for me. But considering the weather where I was at prior, where the average temperature was like 85 to 90, a little bit of an adjustment, but I'm happy to be back. October here in Chattanooga is absolutely my favorite time of year. I'm super lucky. I live in an apartment where I can see the river and some of the mountains and the leaves changing, and it's absolutely stunning. No place I'd rather be than right here talking to all of you guys, because there's two big things that occurred over the weekend, and we're going to talk about both of those, extremely pertinent to this podcast. The first of those is going to be the season one finale of HBO's House of the Dragon, the Game of Thrones prequel. Not only have I seen the finale and every other episode, obviously, as I've talked about all of them, but I've also read the source material, Fire and Blood by George R. R. Martin. Read that, watched the show, very excited to deliver those takes to you. But where I want to start is over in the UFC, as we had one hell of an event that the UFC put on this Saturday. Of course, that is going to be UFC 280, which the headline on that card was Islam Makhachev and Charles Oliveira for the lightweight title after it was left vacant by Charles Oliveira when he missed weight, but he still went on to beat Justin Gaethje. Obviously, that title remains vacant due to Oliveira missing weight. But now we have our definitive answer. Who is the king of the lightweight division? But it didn't start there. We had some incredible fights on this card. It was a very, very, very star-studded card with some fan-favorite fighters like Aljamain, the Funkmaster Sterling, Sean O'Malley, Piotr Jan, Benil Dariush. And of course, we had Charles Oliveira and Islam Makhachev. This is also a controversial card for several reasons. The main issue people having with Sean O'Malley and Piotr Jan, but let's just go ahead and start there. Well, no. Let's talk about Benil Dariush, who had an incredible three-round fight against Matheus Gamrot, who's a hell of a fighter on his own. The Gamer, which is a love it or hate it nickname. I know I love the nickname Game anytime that any of these fights come up. But Dariush, man, this is a guy who's been waiting for a big fight like this. He's on the main card in what is easily going to be one of the most watched cards of the entire year. And it comes at kind of a bittersweet angle because if you remember, he was actually supposed to fight Islam Makhachev several months ago as headlining a UFC fight night. That did not go down. I believe Bobby Green, somebody interesting, replaced Beneil Dariush, and Islam Makhachev handed them a massive L served up on a silver platter. It was like a 45-second fight where Makhachev actually got the win by TKO, which is unusual for a Dagestani fighter. But we're going to talk way more about Islam Makhachev earlier. I just wanted to give a big shout-out to Beneil Dariush because he's a fighter who I'm a big fan of. He's a guy I really want to see reach the upper levels of lightweight contention. And with this fight, I know he had mentioned maybe getting a shot at the title. I absolutely do not think that is going to happen with everything going on. I actually believe that the winner of Chandler and Poirier will actually go on to fight Charles Oliveira in a fight. I think that Chandler might take that one. We'll get a rematch of Oliveira and Chandler, which it would be an astounding fight because if you remember how that first fight went down, absolutely stunning. And I really honestly just, you know, speaking from me and maybe also speaking from the perspective of the UFC, I don't really want to see Poirier and Oliveira again. I feel like the chance for a title for Dustin Poirier, perhaps that ship has sailed. If I was Poirier, I'd listen to Conor. I'd take that fight again. I'd beat Conor. I'd get that Conor payday, expand your hot sauce business, set up your family even more than they're probably already set up with that Conor McGregor money. But Beneil Dariush, wonder what will happen there. Maybe the loser goes to that. I don't know. I really don't know what will happen. I really don't know. And that's not any kind of shade of disrespect to Beneil Dariush because he is a remarkable fighter, as I've been saying this whole segment. But I'm just curious what they're going to be doing with him. But I also want to talk about Manan Firo. She went on to face Caitlin Chookagian, who is, once again, you know, Jazzy and I talk about this, that the women's flyweight division in the UFC is one of, I would actually venture to say, it's one of the top three most entertaining divisions in all of combat sports. It's fast, it's quick, it's powerful. And Manan Firo, the French woman, comes in, absolutely does a really incredible performance. When people had ruled her out, I believe she came in as a slight underdog in this fight against Caitlin Chookagian, but she gets the win there. Big difference maker was going to be the significant strikes. Caitlin Chookagian, 76. And then for Manon Firo, 98, which is big. And significant strikes, keep this in mind when we go and talk about our next fight, which was my big fight of the night, as we had Watch It Podcast alum Sean O'Malley going against Piotr Jan. And Sean in this fight, man, I was worried for him going into this. I was worried for him. Piotr's a beast of a fighter. He's incredible. Sean, it was a bad matchup for him because Piotr is really able to take people to the ground. And that's something that Sean hasn't really dealt with in quite some time. And Sean's a very accurate, a very great striker. But I was worried about those skill sets clashing between the two with the advantage going over to Piotr Jan, who was 16-3 at the time of coming in this fight. Obviously, O'Malley calls himself undefeated, but he is 16-1 on the UFC record books. But the fight starts, man, and Piotr comes out absolutely dominant, able to hold Sean O'Malley to the ground for just really whenever he wanted. Sean sliding in and out of that, and then Piotr was just landing some pretty brutal leg kicks on O'Malley, but O'Malley really wasn't showing the damage of any of those. But then right around, it was either early third round or late second round, Sean gets a nice right cross over on Piotr Jan, opens up a massive cut, absolutely massive cut on the side of Piotr's head, blood streaming everywhere, and it was a huge strike. Perhaps one could say it was a fight-winning strike, despite the two-second ground advantage that Sean O'Malley had against the over five-minute advantage that Piotr Jan had. Sean was the one who actually took the win of this, and the reasoning was going to be the significant strikes. Sean had 84, Piotr had 58, which is a massive differential. And if you look at the total strikes the total strikes that were landed in this. Sean O'Malley had 91, Piotr 97. Piotr threw a total of 139, Sean 171. And it really speaks to the all-important significant strikes category. And maybe there was a little bit of I don't even know what I would call this, rising star syndrome that got into the judges' minds when thinking about Sean O'Malley against Piotr Jan. Sean looked just as stunned as all of us when his hand got raised on that fight. But I knew right after one judge said Sean O'Malley, right? I was sure it was going to be a unanimous decision, but when I heard it was going to split decision from that second judge, I had a feeling Sean was going to be taking that fight in the 5 seconds I had to wait between judge reveals. But Jan went out and tweeted that he's pissed. He said, fuck the judges, he says. He doesn't believe in it. And then I don't know the validity of this report, but it's just some kind of Twitter account that has a pretty decent following says that he's possibly considering leaving the UFC. Which if I'm him, I don't want to do that at all, man. Why would I do that? Get a rematch. Because you're going to have to wait, because I think O'Malley is going to be getting the match with Aljamain, because that's kind of just the way these things go. Winner of this going to fight the winner of the title fight, and that's what we're going to be moving on next to, which was the bantamweight title fight against Aljamain Sterling and TJ Dillashaw. Aljo, I have to admit, I was an Aljo hater for quite some time. I really was hated on Aljo. I thought that I wasn't a big fan of what happened after that disqualification of Piotr Jan, but he silenced me after he beat Piotr Jan again. And he semi-silenced me once again when he beat TJ Dillashaw. But here's where there's a little bit of an asterisk to this fight. And I don't want to take anything away from Aljo. I've already done that enough. But TJ, man, he comes out within the first 10 seconds of this fight. Clearly dislocates his shoulder. Absolute clear dislocation. And I was watching this being like, why aren't they stopping this? And it's revealed that after the fight, TJ, he was actually been struggling with this issue for several weeks. He said that over the course of his training camp, he dislocated his shoulder north of about 20 times, which is absolutely insane that happened. It's crazy, but it did happen, and he let the judges know not to stop this, or the referee to know not to stop this, let it keep going. And Aljo, that's the way he was operating. There was even at times after the first round, they pop it back in at his camp. Second round immediately comes back out. And, you know, Aljo, he's doing his duty against him. He's really going hard. And there's a point where Aljo, they get back up after Aljo's has him on the ground. They get up, and you can see the shoulder. It's brutal. It's absolutely brutal. It's totally mangled. And Aljo kind of gives us some look like, do you want to keep doing this? And they keep doing this. And then the fight is called. And that's when everything is revealed. Aljo, he's staying is the bantamweight champion, likely going to be facing Sugar Sean O'Malley in the next bantamweight title fight. Which, that's going to be an interesting fight, man. It's going to be an interesting fight. If that fight goes to the ground, Aljo's got it easy, man. The Funkmaster will take that fight no problem. As Ike Feldman likes to say from NBC Sports, that belt is going right back to Strong Island. But if Sean can land those strikes like he did against Piotr Jan, really build those strikes up, that significant strike category stays off the ground, man. That's huge against Aljo. Piotr, it's one thing, but Aljo is much more known for his wrestling. So as long as that fight doesn't go to the ground, I think Sean's going to be able to take that. But if O'Malley even gives Aljo the time of day with that ground game, it's done. Aljo's going to retain it all again. And speaking of retaining titles, the province, I don't know what I would call it in Russia. I guess it's not a province. The area of Dagestan, they get their title back as Islam Makhachev takes down the lightweight champion. I guess he wasn't the lightweight champion at the time, but I would go ahead and call him the lightweight champion, Charles Dubronx Oliveira. Makhachev shows him the wrestling. He absolutely stunned everybody by submitting Oliveira relatively early into the five-round fight, and it was a hell of a win. It was an absolute hell of a win by Islam Makhachev. He claims that lightweight title in extremely impressive fashion from, in my opinion, one of the greatest lightweight fighters of of all time. One of the most impressive win streaks ever is ended, but Islam Makhachev's streak will continue, and that is actually going to be continuing against Alexander Volkanovski, the featherweight champion. He's going to be moving up, and they are going to fight for the title next with Islam Makhachev's first title defense in Perth against Volk. Man, that is going to be an outstanding fight. I'm happy, on one hand, to have a Dagestani champion back on the pedestal for the lightweight division, because you get all these people kind of showing their ass in a way, not appreciating how impressive those fighters are with their wrestling. He's calling it boring. Islam Makhachev's a little bit different. He's a little faster than Khabib Nurmagomedov was, and I'm curious to see how this goes against Volkanovski, who's the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the entire world for extremely good reason. He's one of the most well-rounded fighters of all time. He's one of the best featherweights of all time, and he's a guy, I think he's about 5'5", 5'6", so I'm curious to see how that works when moving up that extra 10 pounds to lightweight. I'm curious to see what he does there, because he has a hell of a challenge ahead of him with Islam Makhachev. But we will see when that happens. We are going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about the season finale to HBO's House of the Dragon. Don't go anywhere. Did all this MMA talk make you want to look into picking up a new hobby? Well, try out Agogi Combatives. Agogi Combatives is going to be the premier destination to learn mixed martial arts here in the Tennessee Valley in North Georgia. Agogi Combatives is going to be a very short drive from downtown Chattanooga, Tennessee, located out in Rossville, Georgia. You're going to be learning real mixed martial arts from the best coaches and athletes in the region. There's so many of them to name. There's so many different styles and classes you can take. So head over to agogicombatives.com to see the full suite of those classes and those incredible instructors over at Agogi. One more time, that is Agogi Combatives. You do not want to miss out on the premier destination for mixed martial arts in our area, and that is at Agogi Combatives. All right, man. Wow. HBO. Look, I was a little worried about their end game for the Game of Thrones projects and anything like that after the collapse that was Season 8. That was like the Falcons blowing 28-3 in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, the way that Game of Thrones fumbled the bag to end what was otherwise one of the most incredible TV shows of all time. So the pressure was on House of the Dragon to bring us back into that universe, to roar us back, no pun intended, into the world of Westeros. And I'll be damned if they didn't do that and more with this first season of the show. In some ways, it's extremely similar to Game of Thrones. In other ways, it's massively different. House of the Dragon, the first season at least, takes itself as more of a political thriller. It spans a very long time. I believe it spans almost 20 years worth of material. Of course, we started the series with Millie Alcock playing Rhaenyra, who did a fantastic job. And we also had Emily Carey, who played Queen Alicent Hightower, also did a fantastic job. And then that's not to mention the change that we saw from all of the other characters, like Viserys Targaryen, who's played masterfully by one of the most incredible actors of our time, Paddy Considine, Rhys Effins, who played Otto Hightower. We also have, Matt Smith is Daemon Targaryen, my favorite character on the show. We have Fabian Frankel, who plays Sir Christian Cole, who didn't really change all that much after the fourth episode. And then, of course, the guy who plays Corlys Velaryon, and her name is slipping me, but who plays Rhaenys Targaryen. She does a fantastic job. But after that episode 5, switch over to Emma Darcy. They do an amazing job taking over from what Millie Alcock set the precedent with that character. And then, amazingly, Olivia Cooke, who is one of the bigger actors on the show, comes in and takes over from Emily Carey onto Queen Alicent. It was such an efficient transition. The way that the engine that was House of the Dragon, just kept on churning and moving that story along, especially with a rather complicated political timeline and family timeline between the Valyrians and the Targaryens and the Hightowers and the Strongs and everything like that. Really, really, really effective job. And the thing is, especially if you've read source material, Fire and Blood, which I highly recommend you do. It's fantastic. Even it might not be what you're expecting, though. If you watch Game of Thrones and then you went to go read A Song of Ice and Fire, it's not like a narrative strict, you know, I guess like a novel. You know, it's more reads like a history book, Fire and Blood does. And The Dance of Dragons is only a very small sliver of Fire and Blood. It's a very small part. The rest of it is all about the history of the Targaryens, Aegon's conquest, things like that. I highly recommend it, especially if you want to have a lot of context for what you're about ready to see, because if you've recently rewatched Game of Thrones, you know a lot of the big plot points that will happen on House of the Dragon, so you're already spoiled, in a sense, of some of the bigger events on the show, but trust me, there's a lot of surprises along the way that I don't think people are very ready for. An example of that was what went down at Storm's End on the season finale that we're going to talk about here in a little bit, between Aemon Targaryen and Lucerys Velaryon. I mean, there's so many things just like that moment that are just waiting for you in these next upcoming seasons. And for those people who said that the show was too boring, it was too much of a political thriller, first of all, grow up. Watch House of Cards, realize the intensity behind that is in some instances might be even more intense than what you see in The Dance of Dragons and the Civil War and that's impending now. But just know that it's about to go full-blown balls-to-the-wall chaos that you might associate with some of the better later seasons of Game of Thrones, specifically like season 6 is what I would compare the intensity level of what we're about to see to all of this. And a lot of things happen, but I want to talk about this finale. And I really, actually I want to start with episode 9, and I want to talk about Olivia Cooke's performance as Allison Hightower. It's not a secret at all. If you've listened to this podcast before, even when House of the Dragon was still on its way, that I am a Olivia Cooke stan. She's one of my favorite working actresses. She's absolutely incredible, even in smaller roles like she was in Ready Player One. The big ones that come to mind when I think of her career is Meet Earl and the Dying Girl, which is a fantastic movie, and the very recent Sound of Metal, which she was fantastic in. Absolutely great next to Riz Ahmed. And even with all of these things being considered, this is, to me, Olivia Cooke, far and away, her best performance. This is a character that I think that she is meant to embody. This kind of dichotomy with Allison Hightower is you go one episode and you're on her side. You know, you understand where the Greens are coming from. And a lot of that understanding comes from Allison, because the rest of the Greens, fuck them. Don't really like any of them. Otto, asshole. Jason and Tyland Lannister, don't like them. Pretty much all of the Greens don't like Aegon. Hate him. Helaena's okay, and Aemon, he's an asshole, but he's badass. So, you know, the sympathy for the Greens to me, I am a Team Black supporter, but the sympathy for the Greens is all viewed through the lens of Allison Hightower. I truly do believe that had the prophecy not have been misconstrued by Allison, which I don't 1000% don't, I don't blame Allison for hearing that and being confused. You know what I mean? If I was Allison, I'd be like, oh my God, Aegon's, he wants him to be the king. But obviously Allison's not the chosen one of the people who's trusted with that prophecy. But it's just all of the sympathy for me with the Greens has to be viewed through Allison, because she's one of the only sympathetic characters, aside from Helaena, perhaps, and in some instances, Aemond, on that side of the Civil War, who I understand where they're coming from. And Olivia Cooke does a very good job of that. It's not only the action, either. It's not only the actual plot that's moving that forward, but it's her performance, the work that she does just with her face, plus the context that was masterfully built by Millie Alcock and Emily Carey, who established those characters, you have to put them as one entity. And the casting department for House of the Dragon did a fantastic job of ensuring that. But that's my big thing, because obviously I'm more of a Team Black fan. I'm all in on Rhaenyra and her quest here, because Emma Darcy, my goodness, did they knock it out of the fucking park with their performance in this season, and specifically this episode, episode 10. It's a lot of parallels to the first time that we see Emma Darcy as Rhaenyra, giving birth under extremely complicated circumstances, but this time there is world-impacting circumstances behind this. And Emma Darcy does an amazing job of bringing Rhaenyra's pain and sympathy to life, just as Matt Smith as Daemon brings anger and rage with this situation to life. And Matt Smith is a guy, I remember when the show first was announced, people weren't sold on that casting. But I'll tell you what do you think now? Because that dude has absolutely blown me away with this. And something else that's blown me away is the characterization of all the children on the show, the grandchildren. And I guess in some instances, if you're referring to Rhaenyra, her siblings with Aemond and Aegon. Because I was a little worried that the show was going to struggle with characterizing all of them effectively, quickly enough, where when something like Storm's End happens, that we weren't going to care. You know, they throw a lot at you very quickly, but the difference between this show and Game of Thrones is, yes, they're throwing a lot of characters at you very quickly, but they're all very centralized. It's not like in Game of Thrones where you met all of the Starks, you met all of the Lannisters, and then they go two different directions, then some of them go in other directions, and then you meet the Greyjoys, and then you meet the Dorne, the people from Dorne, and then you meet all these other people from the Riverlands, the Vale. And they're all just in these big, not even a circle, it's these infinity signs. But in House of the Dragon, it's a big circle just with the Targaryens, Valyrians, and the Hightowers. And then briefly, the Strongs. So I was a little worried that they weren't going to spend enough time with certain characters like Lucerys, so that when Aemond accidentally does kill him, you know, you actually care. And the show did a great job of making the events at Storm's End feel immensely impactful, because they are. No shit. It's the point of no return for both of these parties, because there's no way that Daemon or Rhaenyra is going to be like, oh, oof, accident. Oof. Yeah, you ripped my son to dragon in half with the biggest dragon ever. Oof. Biggest living dragon. It's okay. No, not how it's going to go. And then for the Greens, it's kind of, for them, at least the way I understand it, it's a point of inevitability is the way the book makes it sound. The book fleshes Storm's End out a little bit more, but also in the book, it wasn't an accident. The show makes it pretty clear that it was an accident, and they mentioned this in the kind of post-show, I almost said post-game press conference, the post-show kind of interviews and everything that they did. That I thought was really fascinating. The director of this episode mentioned that now it's going to be time for Aemond to own it and become the guy that he seems to want to be, which is just discount Daemon. Or is it hesitance? I think it's going to be the former. I really do. Aemond's one of the most fascinating characters in the book. Tough to see Lucerys go like that, because now we have Jacerys. I believe he's going to Winterfell to meet Kriegan Stark, who I am extremely excited for. In this show. Very excited. They seem to be taking a different direction with Kriegan Stark. In the books, he's the old man of the North. He's supposed to be very, very old, but a very competent warrior. But in the show, they actually mention that he's quite a bit younger. So we'll see how that plays out. I wonder if that ties into the Henry Cavill rumors that may or may not be true still due to him going back into the role of Superman, which also I'm very excited for. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But a lot to look forward to for House of the Dragon Season 2. Tough way for Lucerys to go out. But if it makes you feel any better in the book, the book's interesting because it provides three different accounts of what happens. One upsetting detail is that in the book, they find out of his death by the head of his dragon washing up on the beach. But no body of Lucerys found, and you know, it's assumed by most of the maesters that he's dead, but there is one account where it says that he actually survived the fall and lost all of his memory and lived the rest of his life as a fisherman, which that's what I hope happens on the show. But I do not think that will be the way it goes down. But the way that this went down today on this episode, I'm very glad to be back here on the Watch It podcast. Got all of the takes out I needed to about UFC 280 as well as House of the Dragons finale. Well, maybe not all of my takes about House of the Dragon finale, as I'm sure we're going to be talking about that more with Haley Bartlett or anybody else who wants to talk about it, because I absolutely love that show. But coming up on Friday's episode, oh yeah, Torres the Punisher Finney. He had a big win at Jorge Masvidal's Icon Fighting Championship. We're going to talk to him about that win and see what's coming next for the Punisher, one of the most exciting MMA prospects in the country. So do not miss that out on the Watch It podcast. I want to.